What's up, everyone? Buckeye Dill here. You're listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show, part of the NoOffSeason.com Sports Network. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to stick around for top-notch advice on how to stay up to date with your sports card investment portfolio. Because remember, there is no off-season.
What's up, everyone? This is Mark Hill from MyCardPost. You're listening to the Sports Card Strategy Show. There is no off-season.
What's up, everybody? I'm Paul Hickey with NoOffSeason.com. This is the Sports Card Strategy Show, brought to you by Graybo's Sports Cards. Graybo's Sports Cards is a local card shop located in Richmond, Virginia, and is owned by Gray Burnett, Ryan Fitz, and Duke Dodson, who you know as Denny One Time. Graybo's sports the best selection of singles in the Mid-Atlantic and a wide variety of wax. Graybo's is happy to announce that they are now the only direct buyer of Topps Bowman in Central Virginia and are now breaking daily on Fanatics Live. They are moving to their new larger shop, which will be connected to the hottest sports bar in Richmond in the near future. Stay tuned for those details. Listeners of Sports Card Strategy can use the promo code STRATEGY2023 to get 10% off any purchase on Graybo's.co. Graybo's loves the Sports Card Strategy family and is proud of their longstanding partnership with Hickey Baby and the gang. Don't forget to get a free 30-day trial at NoOffSeason.com today to help you make money flipping sports cards, build your sports card investment portfolio, get unlimited advice from our experts, and take sports card school to navigate the hobby. That's NoOffSeason.com. Get your free 30-day trial today. All the data we use on the Sports Card Strategy Show is from MarketMoversApp.com. Use code NOOFFSEASON at MarketMoversApp.com to get 20% off for life after a free 14-day trial. All right, let's get to the Sports Card Strategy.
Happy Hump Day, everyone. Thanks for being here. My name is Connor Barnett. I'm the head of content at NoOffSeason.com. Welcome to the NoOffSeason.com family, as well as the Sports Card Strategy Show. We are here today to help you build your ideal sports card investment portfolio and, of course, enjoy the hobby in whichever way that may be for you. If you do like the content we're putting out on a daily, weekly basis, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe at youtube.com/Paul Hickey. It's a great way to support us there. We got an exciting episode today. We're going to start things off with some more football updates. Obviously, since the last time we met, there were some more fireworks in terms of signings, players swapping teams, swapping jerseys, and things like that. So we're going to touch on what that means in the sports card market and where we need to adjust our current portfolios based on those changes made. And then we've got a fantastic interview led by Paul Hickey and our guy Andy Kaysen of Football Card Quest with Andy Broom, who's the VP and head grader at CGC Cards. It's very insightful. Like I mentioned, a fantastic interview, and we are excited to share it all with you guys. Pumped to be back here with you all. Paul will be back next Monday, but for now, it's just me today. We got our guy Gabe Davis in the chat. What's up, Gabe? Barry Siff says, busy prepping for this week's huge Arizona State spring training card show. Very excited for you guys. Hopefully that goes really well. Keep us posted on how things go there. Got our guy Bo Belcher says, I'm showing up with the freshest hats. Thank you, Bo. I appreciate it. And we got our guy Christopher Bell in the chat. Chris, thanks for being here. No worries about on being wrong about Saquon going to the Cowboys. Gabe Davis says, Paul on vacation. Let's go. He'll be back Monday, so regularly scheduled programming will begin again on Monday. Again, guys, this is a super insightful interview. Real quick before we hop in, so thanks to our NoOffSeason.com network partner, CGC Cards. Check out NoOffSeason.com and click on the banner ad for CGC Cards and get more details on their great grading service for PC protection starting at $12. This supports us. This supports CGC Cards. Please know we are grading our cards for flipping purposes, strictly with PSA for the time being, but are considering sending some low-dollar cards to CGC to try out their experience for myself. Obviously, this interview comes on the back end of us visiting CGC headquarters, which I was impressed by. They had some fantastic people there. I think their mission statement really is like, we're going to do things the right way and hope that that pans out to seeing growth, which I think is awesome. So a lot of good people that we met over there. Andy Broom was awesome. Shout out to all of them for taking the time and for getting us out there. Also want to give a shout out to our guys at Graybo's. Listeners of the Sports Card Strategy can now use the promo code Graybo's20. That's Graybo's20 to get $20 off their first purchase with Graybo's on Fanatics Live there. All right. Mr. T in the house. Good to see you, Mr. T. Let's hop into some of these football updates that happened either post Monday or during the show Monday that we weren't able to get to. Starting things off with Saquon Barkley inking that 3-year, $37 million deal with the Philadelphia Eagles, going from one of the worst offensive lines for rushing purposes to one of the best. Excited to see what he does there. His entire card market, this includes rookies, non-rookies, graded cards, non-graded cards, is up 5.1% over the last 7 days. Some of the notables there, his 2018 Select Field Silver in a PSA 10, which is up 55%, though that is just across two sales. So take that as you wish. 2020 Optic Downtown PSA 10 is up 41%, also just two sales. 2018 Optic Base in PSA 10 is up 22% over the last 7 days, and that's across seven sales. Then also his 2018 Optic Hollow in PSA 10 is up 15% over the last 7 days. Again, that is just two sales there. In my opinion, when it comes to Saquon, you should probably be trying to move his prints, especially the ones I just mentioned, if you're in the green based on where you purchased. Skill position guy, obviously, high injury rate, getting a little bit later in his career. The average tenure for an NFL running back is somewhere between 2 and 3 years. So obviously Saquon's past that mark. He's had some significant injuries there. So be cautious. I'm thinking you should probably be trying to move Saquon if you're in the green so that you can reinvest in more stable assets, or if you're dead set on investing in Saquon during this offseason, whether it be trying to make money from, you know, the NFL hype cycle or performance spikes, probably want to sell now either way and try to buy back in on a dip in a few weeks when he isn't in the news like he is right now. Capitalize on the demand, capitalize on the hype. I would go ahead and get those Saquon cards moved. Also, Kirk Cousins agreed to a 4-year, $180 million deal with the Atlanta Falcons, which I believe is going to be a great fit. They got some great talent over there. Kirk Cousins, I think, is one of the better passers in the NFL in terms of throwing a nice ball. His entire card market is up 10% over the last 7 days. However, the only card worth $25 or more that's actually up over that time period is this 2012 Contenders Rookie Ticket Auto, which is up 22% on two trades. Everything else up for Cousins, really, in the last week since kind of the hype has increased for him since the move happened, I guess, roughly 24 hours ago. It's just raw prints and most of the stuff between $5 and $10. So it looks maybe like if you're on market movers, you'll see up 100%, up 200%, whatever it may be. But really, most of those are going from $3 to $5. $4 to $8, things like that. So nothing huge to note there for Kirk Cousins. Derrick Henry to the Ravens on a 2-year, $18 million deal. Everyone knew he was out of Tennessee. Unfortunately, I am from Tennessee. Obviously, hate to see King Henry go, but I guess it was time. Down 3% across the board for Derrick Henry over the last 7 days, 3.5%. However, a couple cards to note here is 2016 Prism Silver and PSA 10 is up 26% over the last week. And his 2021 Optic Downtown PSA 10 is up 3% across five sales. Kind of expected a little bit more of a jump out of Derrick Henry, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see some healthy growth from the hype cycle for Derrick Henry as, you know, hype for the Eagles kind of picks back up after a disappointing end to last year. A couple more names to roll through here. Joe Mixon on the move to the Texans. Not much movement in his card market, but his 2017 Optic Base in PSA 10 is up 29% over the last 60 days, albeit just two trades. His Prism Silver and PSA 10 is up 13% over that time period. And here's my thoughts. If you're holding Mixon prints for whatever reason, I would use now increased demand, hopefully a little bit increased pricing to get out and get as much out of them as you can so that you can reinvest into better opportunities, more stable assets with higher upside. Hopefully not skill position guys that are potentially going to be on the back end of their career in the near future. Another skill position guy that moved was Josh Jacobs, who filled the void of Aaron Jones in Green Bay. His card market is up 15% over the last 7 days. To his 2023 absolute kaboom, that's the horizontal one, in raw is up 25% across 12 sales. 2019 Prism Silver PSA 9 is up 15% across three sales. So some interesting movement for Josh Jacobs there. I'm wondering if some of that, you know, is just Packers fan base being huge. Obviously, he led the league in rushing a couple years ago. Curious to see how he fits there. I really liked where Aaron Jones kind of fit in that offense. So curious to see what things look like there. But ultimately, guys, obviously, we're seeing a lot. We're seeing a lot of moves in the NFL, and it's important to keep up with the market to understand where we need to exit, especially if we're holding on to cards that maybe aren't necessarily the right player or the right card or the right time, so that we can get that cash flow back and invest in things that we do believe are the right card, right player at the right time, right? So expect a sell alert coming from me this afternoon. It will likely encompass all the NFL cards that I think should probably be moved right now. So just expect that coming this afternoon. Sign up for sell alerts at 1-833-888-8888. 972-5727. And thanks for being patient with me on getting those out. Shout out to our guy, Justin Sort, in the chat. Says, good afternoon, Connor. Good afternoon, Justin. Thanks for being here as always. All right, guys, without further ado, we're going to hop into this awesome interview, and then I will catch you guys on the back end of it to answer whatever questions you guys have in the chat to the best of my ability. But for now, I will let our guys, Andy Kaysen from Football Card Quest and Paul Hickey of NoOffseason.com of the Sports Card Strategy Show, take things away with Andy Broom, VP and head grader at CGC Cards.
What's up, everybody? I'm Paul Hickey with NoOffseason.com, host of the Sports Card Strategy Show. I am here today with my good friend Andy Kaysen of Football Card Quest and Andy Broom, VP of CGC Cards, professional card grader since 1999. It's great to have you here, Andy Broom. Really appreciate your time sitting down with Football Card Quest, Sports Card Strategy Show, part of the NoOffseason.com family. Great to meet you, man.
Yeah, great to meet you guys, man. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. I know our audience is really excited to get into some talk with you today about your experience grading cards, talking about the hobby overall. So why don't you just start by giving us a quick overview of Andy Broom. Who are you? How'd you get started in the hobby? And what's it like at CGC Cards?
Yeah, okay. So my very first pack I ever broke was 83 Tops. But I didn't really get into cards heavily until about sometime in 86. You know, at that time, cards were really getting big. So every kid in my neighborhood, we all collected cards. I'll never forget this. I ventured into the neighboring neighborhood many blocks away because there was a rumor that a kid had an 86 Donruss Canseco. And so we hadn't seen one yet, so we actually went to this new neighborhood that we didn't normally, you know, go play in to go see this thing in a one-inch Lucite cube, you know. But what really got me set up for this career and what really got me on this path was, you know, I started doing shows on the weekends in 88, 89. I was at a flea market and bought a shoebox from an elderly woman who was set up selling literally antiques. And she had this shoebox of cards, and there was some 60s and 70s in there, but there was these square cards in there that were very cartoonish. It was 38 Gaudi, and I thought, man, these are really cool. And so bought the box, took it home, and I'm looking in my guide and like the Bob Feller and the DiMaggio. I mean, these are hundreds of dollars at the time. Obviously, they're a little more now, but these were hundreds of dollars each, and I'm thinking, you know, my first inclination is why? Why are she just, you know, selling like this? Well, as I did a little more research, I found that reprint had been scraped off the back of them, and they were made to look, oh, they were weathered. And so, you know, that set me off. Why? Why would somebody go to this effort to do this? And so that really led me down this path I want to know everything about cards. How are they made? Why are they altered? How are they altered? And things of that nature. And so now, you know, flash forward a few years after that, and here we are.
Amazing story. It's like you're born to be a card grader right from that experience. That's awesome.
Yeah, no doubt.
So before I let Andy Kaysen from Football Card Quest jump into our pre-screened questions here, what was special about the 86 Canseco? Like, what was it about that card that made you want to go check it out at that time?
Yeah, you know, that was at that point in the hobby, you know, there weren't many cards that were modern cards that were trading for, you know, over $100 or more. You know, the Mattingly rookie, of course, the Eric Davis rookie was huge at the time. But Canseco was really that first in modern cards, the big sexy card, right? This is the rookie. This is Jose Canseco. And so that was just that first modern marquee card. And getting to see that, you know, was that for you know, kids our age at the time, that was really cool. And, you know, looking back, you know, really turns out it wasn't that big of a card. But, you know, it's funny when you look back and things like that, what were big. Like I said, I mentioned Eric Davis rookie. Man, I remember countless magazines, you know, during that period in the late 80s. And it was all about that, you know, the Eric Davis rookie card which one to have and stuff. So
that's awesome. Early prospecting.
That's right. That's right.
Well, yeah. So congratulations for surviving the junk wax era, early 90s.
That's
so
right.
You were a collector before then and stayed a collector after the junk wax era?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That was, you know, looking back, that late 80s, early 90s, the first big boom in the hobby. and how crazy times those were, and then comparing it to today, the pandemic and what we saw in that bubble. And it's really interesting to compare and contrast the two, what's different, what's the same, you know. And so, yeah, so far I've survived two of those bubbles. So we'll see what the next one looks like.
Nice. So my first question for you, Andy, is around the grading process. What can you share with us around creating consistency in the grading process?
Yeah, you know, that's as far as maintaining a grading line and a grading team, consistency is number one, paramount to everything that we do. You know, getting graders trained and up to speed, teaching them about alterations and counterfeits, we can do all of that, but you have to maintain that. It's not enough to just teach somebody how to grade in a classroom, throw them out on the floor and say, well, we're good to go. We never have to revisit that. Training is an ongoing process. We have a great educational program here in our company. Dr. Webb is our director of education. And so if you're a new hire, or if you're someone that's maybe you're advancing in your grading career here, you actually go through his program, his classroom, and it's hands-on classroom for weeks at a time, learning about how to grade and everything that you need to know. But we also do modules and other classes to maintain that consistency. And you know, we have periodic testing that we do to make sure that we're all on that line, because you know, that's number one, is the consistency. If you don't have a consistent grading company, you don't have a grading company.
So your title's VP, but you're a grader. Like, yeah. you started as a grader, right? So talk to us about, like, you know, from the Kenseco that you figured out was the hot card at the time, to the box of the Gaudi that you found, and then you found out, like, those weren't authentic, right? So talk to us about, like, your favorite collectible that you've ever graded.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, now I have to pick my children, I guess, here. No, you know, I've been doing this for a few years now, and I've had the privilege of grading most every big marquee card you can think of. The one card that has eluded my grading career is the Baltimore News Ruth. I have not graded one of those. So, you know, time will tell. But, you know, I have seen some amazing cards. I've gotten to grade and authenticate some amazing cards. But, you know, I always go back to the one is the first Wagner that I graded. You know, being able to grade a Wagner. You know, I just in this world, that's the World Series, right? In card grading, that's the pinnacle. So there's a lot of really cool and unique cards I have gotten handled, but I'd have to say it's got to be the Wagner.
So what was the grade?
It was a one.
A one. Yeah, okay, yeah. Nice. So
it's probably pretty impressive from the 30s, right?
So it's from 1909, so even older, yeah. So the great thing about that particular one that I graded is the eye appeal is beautiful. I love the image of that thing, but, you know, it's a technical grade. The corners are completely gone. There's creasing. There's back damage. And so, you know, it's a one, but it's a pretty one, but it's a Wagner. So, you know, it doesn't really matter the grade.
So Andy, when you were talking about the training and the graders focus on staying up to speed on your grading standards, do you have graders that are dedicated just to sports cards? Because I know you guys do a lot in TCG, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic the Gathering, and whatnot, and you're growing in the sports card space. Do you have graders that basically do TCG and sports cards, or do you have just graders focused on sports cards?
Yeah, you know, that's the one unique thing about our company and the way we train our graders and maintain our grading teams is that, you know, ultimately our goal is all of our grading experts can handle any type of material. That's the goal. But where we differentiate ourselves from other grading companies is we have teams that are dedicated to the material. And so we have experts who their focus is only TCG. We have people who focus only on vintage sports and non-sports. We have specialists that only specialize in non-sports. And that's the same too in our eBay authenticity program. Our graders, you know, they are based on their expertise and their niche, if you will. And so, yeah, that you want somebody who knows and understands all types of cards to be, you know, degrading mm-hmm. your cards, but you also want that focus expertise, right? If I'm sending in a high-end TCG, I want somebody who that's their focus. That's all they do. That's what their specialty is. Same on sports, you know. If I am sending in, like we said, T206s, I want to know that there's an expert who knows this stuff like the back of his hand or her hand, not somebody that, you know, they just got trained on TCG last week, and vice versa.
So you mentioned earlier the school, like the education process that your graders go through, which sounds amazing. So how often do you kind of cross-educate? So you might have a TCG expert that's grading the bulk of the TCG, or a group that's grading the bulk of the TCG, but you need more help in a particular area. Do you staff for that and then send a new crop of graders through the school, or would you cross-educate already experienced graders maybe in one area and then go get them educated in another area to fill that need?
Yeah, you know what I've found over the years in working with graders, training graders, is that everybody has their niche, their what they like, right? You know, me, pre-war baseball is my thing. I can grade most anything, but that's what I like, and so that's where I'm most valuable. And the same, we'll use TCG as an example, you know. There are TCG graders that we have who do grade non-sport, who grade sports, who do a great job, but their passion's with trading cards. And so, you know, we want to foster that. I want to take those individuals, whatever their specialty is, whatever their passion is, that's what I want to focus on. So it's kind of a mix. You know, we're constantly cross-training so that we can move people if we need to. But ultimately, the goal is we staff based on the material. So we'll have our expertise, you know, in each material. And if we need more experts in that particular material, you know, like we talked about, we either train up or we hire for that.
Have you had the need to scale up your amount of graders for sports cards specifically?
Yes, we have, yeah. And across the board for all types of material for graders, yeah. And in fact, shameless plug, we're always looking for now. I need sports card graders, so anybody's interested, hit me up.
Okay, sounds good. What's the call to action for people to hit you up? Should they go to, is there a page on cgccards.com they should go to?
cgccards.com. I'm on social media, Card Grader on Twitter, so you can always send a message to me. But yeah, either one.
There you go. Nice. Love it. All right, everybody out there in the Sports Card Strategy Show audience and the Football Card Quest audience, you want to be a grader, no better than Andy Broom over here. And, you know, I became familiar with you from your session that you did at Mint Collective. And what I loved about it is it was a lot of tips on pre-grading your cards, how to essentially get your grading submission done, but not from a connect the dots standpoint, from a behind the scenes, from one of the best graders in the industry, one of the most experienced graders who's leading a team of graders saying, okay, everybody, you want to submit your cards, here's how you should prep them. We get, I know Andy Kaysen's audience and our audience at nooffseason.com get questions all the time from people. What kind of effort should I put into pre-grading my cards? So if you had like maybe 3 to 5 real quick tips, do's and don'ts for our audience right now on pre-grading, what would you tell people?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, here's the thing. Card grading is just like anything else. What you get out of it is what you put into it, right? So you're just throwing cards in a box and sending them off and hoping for the best. It's probably not going to end well for you, right? So it's all about the pregame. It's learning what tools that we use, what are we looking for, and you know there's no reason you at home can't pre-screen cards the same way we grade cards. And so some of the quick tips I'll give you is buy a proper loop, buy the type of loop that we use. You know, I've done videos and answer questions about the types of loop, but you know, having a proper loop, having a proper light source. And then learning some techniques. Yeah, again, shameless plug, but we do educational videos for CGC cards that explain how to use these tools, because you know we want people to spend the time to prep their cards. You know, wiping them down, look at the surfaces under a proper light, and that way there's no surprises. You should be able to have your cards packed up, ready to go, and you pretty much know what you're going to get back because you have pre-screened them. And I think that's the key to everything is. The more time you spend pre-screening your cards and really going over them properly, the better your results are going to be. And we want your results to be great. You know, I've heard, you know, things like pop control and all this stuff. But we're in business to grade cards, but also we want you to be happy. So, you know, when you guys send in cards and you've prepped them and you're getting 10s, you know, gym mints and pristines, that makes us happy too. We love seeing it.
So in terms of pristine, this is a perfect time to ask you this question. So what's the most common difference between pristine and then a 10 and a 9.5? Because a lot of times I can't tell the difference from the naked eye, but I'm sure there's microscopic.
Yeah, you know, when you start getting like gym mint and pristine, a lot, probably one of the most common areas that you'll see the difference is going to be the surface. It's going to be things that are easy to miss. You know, we're looking at chrome cards, for instance, chrome surfaces. You know, the hairline scratches, if there's too many, that might keep it from well, Jimit to 9.5, but from pristine to Jimit, it may be a difference in one slight scratch. Indentation, dimples, things of that nature. We were just actually talking this morning about surface of cards in a video, and one of the things we're talking about is, you know, on Topps Chrome, Panini Prisms, both of those, some people call it etching, some people call it embossing, but it's the effect on the surface to make it look like the player's 3D, so kind of like an outline of the player. And sometimes that outline will be shifted over. Sometimes it's not even the same player. It's from a different card. And so those are things that are actually really easy to miss. And so I think, you know, that's when you start getting into the highest of the grades, that it's the small things that are easy to miss. Maybe it's touches on the back corners or surface. And generally, from what I notice, it's usually a surface issue that might have gotten missed.
Yeah. I find that a lot of it, the surface issues, those microscopic dimples, and some sets that I've reviewed from some of my members at the Football Card Quest have more issues than others.
Yeah.
And then you go and you look and you're like, wow, there's only a handful of tens, but hundreds of these cards have been submitted. One that pops in my mind is the 2021 Prism Trevor Lawrence. Is so hard to get a 10 on from what I've seen. There's so many surface issues and print. Are there any considerations that you guys give to specific sets like that? If you see a known issue like a print line that's across the board on all the Trevor Lawrences from 2021 Prism, will you guys forgive that when you're in the grading process?
Yeah, you know, an issue-specific issue such as that, there is an allowance given. I'll give a very classic example. It's a hockey example, but the Steve Yzerman rookie. There's this green dot on the surface in the image. And, you know, this card's been around for a while now. I've never seen one without that green dot. So it's known that that's a flaw in the design when they made the card. There's not one out there that I've seen that doesn't have the green dot. So that's an example of that's an allowance. And you know, like the football cards from Panini, you know, some of those issues we see, like the embossing on some sets are worse than others. Sometimes centering is more of an issue than others on certain sets. So if there's something that is consistent throughout the run, like this card only comes this way, it only has this flaw, then there is an allowance there for sure. Yeah.
Is there a specific set that pops into mind other than like in terms of football cards specifically that kind of pops into mind that like, man, this one always has issues or has a known issue that you can share with us?
Yeah, I can't think of one in very recent, like ultra modern right now off the top of my head, but there's very common issues with certain sets such as, you know, especially in a lot of the full bleed or the without defined borders, those sets. Panini has a lot of those types of sets. You know, I see a lot of quality issues with the centering on those. And when you have a card that doesn't have defined borders, it hides a little bit better to the naked eye, but we're still measuring those. And that's another question we get a lot is how do you measure a card centering if it doesn't have defined borders? And you know, we go off of the what's the intended design. When these cards, this design was created, you know, you have logos, you have different design devices that are supposed to be in certain areas. So we'll actually measure off of those. And so, you know, we'll look at cards when they come out. We'll review them. We try to look for, you know, what the manufacturers put out. They'll put out their designs and showing what they're supposed to look like. So we go off of things like that. But, you know, ultra modern, that's kind of what I see on the no border cards is the consistency in the centering, I think, has been an issue.
Yeah.
Andy, to that point, is there official communications that you have with the card manufacturers? Like, is there an industry standard, like, release that gets sent to the grading companies about the design of the cards and what they're supposed to look like?
Yeah, you know, some manufacturers are good in getting us information. Some aren't as good. You know, that is one thing I wish that we did have more participation with the companies because, you know, we want to work together, and we do work together on a lot of things. But you know, there's not an industry standard, you know, right? Like each checklist comes out, we've got it the day before or something like that. It's sometimes it's hit or miss. So that is one thing I would love is you know, for us and the manufacturers to work closer and be able to, you know, because we're supporting their product. You know, we want to support their product. We want to be involved together. It's not a case where we're trying to call out the manufacturer or something. But you know, sometimes if we get a design ahead of time to look at or something, maybe there is something we can help out with. Like, hey, this is going to be an issue. You know, we, like I said, we're not in competition with the card manufacturers. We do want to work together.
I think you're a great hobbyist, and I want to get into more about what you love about the hobby in a second, but I think we probably have a couple more grading-related questions for you, so I'll take one of them. Any plans for a horizontally formatted slab in the future for horizontal cards?
So we haven't announced this yet, but we do have some new holders coming soon. That we'll talk about more. You know, we've looked at things like some of the horizontal holders, and so I don't know if that one specifically is on the horizon, but we do have some that kind of in the similar vein. I definitely want to talk about, but I can't today. So, but we do have some really cool holders coming this year.
That's a challenge. I mean, I have cards on my wall behind me. And I have horizontal cards. They're all in a vertical slab. And it's like, do I display it horizontal? Then it's out of place with the other vertical cards. You want your card sideways or the slab, you know, sideways. So
yeah,
that's an interesting one.
It is an interesting one. And, you know, and the way I've always looked at this and the way I've always looked at the grading business, right or wrong, but I look at it from a collector standpoint. What would I like, right? What would I be happy with? What's going to piss me off? That's how I look at it, you know, and holders are no different. And the horizontal is an interesting one. You're 100% right, because there's some cards, it's a no-brainer. It'd look really cool. But then there's another aspect to it of, I might not want to buy that card in that holder because it's not going to fit in the box of my others. So there's pros and cons both sides to it. But, it, you know, I think there's a place for it. I think that's something, you know, we'll see what we have coming out here soon with holders, and we'll talk more. But, yeah, I think there's a place for one.
A lot of those horizontal cards, like Immaculate National Treasures, those chunky RPAs,
yeah,
you know, with the rookie autos. Speaking of autos and like event signed autograph cards, do you guys do any type of autograph authentication certification here through CGC?
So we're not doing autograph authentication at this time. Right now, we only grade pack pulled autographs. But stay tuned. That's something, you know, we're always looking at. We definitely want to get to that point.
All right, let's talk more about your involvement in the hobby. So
Okay. We
mentioned you've been grading cards professionally since 1999. You mentioned that you've been in the hobby long before that, in the mid-80s, right? So tell me real quick about your PC, because at the Sports Card Strategy Show and at Football Card Quest, we talk a lot about making money flipping sports cards. And we believe that that brings a lot of enjoyment to people. So whether you flip to fund your PC or whether you flip to fund other things in your life, we believe that brings a lot of enjoyment. One of the challenges we talk a lot about people with is, from a collecting standpoint, what is your why? If you are going to hold a card for a long period of time, what's the why behind that? And so I noticed you have a very unique PC. I had to do a little bit of a research as to who this person is. Tell us about your PC and what is your why behind that?
Well, it probably is a little unusual for most collectors. My PC is Victor Starfin. Victor Starfin was a Russian individual who left Russia during the revolution. I could go on the whole story. It's the story is a movie. But long story short, his family moved to Japan before the war. This was in the late teens, early 20s. You know, 6'4", big Russian guy in Japan. And in early age, he took up baseball. In high school, he was a standout pitcher. And he became a professional pitcher in Japan. And so he was Japan's first 300-game winner and the first non-Japanese elected to the Hall of Fame there. I encourage anybody, I'd love to talk more about it. I know we don't have time for it, but if you just Google Victor Starfin, it's a wonderful story. It's an amazing story, but what this guy went through pre-war and post-war, you know, during the occupational period in Japan, what he went through. And, you know, this is an individual who was an outstanding pitcher, amazing pitcher, but his entire life was he was on this his own island, essentially. You know, he didn't have a home. He didn't have, you know, surrounded by his own people. It was always an outcast. You know, he was always where he didn't belong, I guess, better termed. I found out about his story in the late 90s, and I thought, my first thought was, why didn't I know about this? Why isn't this a huge story? You know, we've all heard of Sadaharo, right? Why haven't I heard of Victor Starfin, you know, coming out of Japan, right? And so I just went down the rabbit hole of researching the story and fell in love with it. and fell in love with his cards. And so I learned quickly how challenging it is to collect vintage Japanese baseball, and I've been doing it ever since.
I think you mentioned a key word there, challenging, because a lot of times on the Sports Card Strategy Show, I'll challenge our audience to, like, why, like, anybody can go buy a card. So in theory, anybody can PC anybody. But what is it about the chase and the challenge? And so I think you articulated that well. What advice would you give to people looking to PC someone?
Yeah, you know, here's the whole goal about your PC, right? It's to make you happy. So until, and you may not know who that is right now, but until you find that player or that subject matter, if you're into non-sports, whatever it may be, you'll know. Whatever locks on to you, like, man, this is my passion. This is just cool. The value means nothing. To your point, you know, I can PC anything. If I have the money, I can buy whatever I want. One of the great things about my PC is it doesn't matter how much money you have. You got to wait till this material surfaces. I have several cards that are signed by Victor Starvin. I didn't have the first one of those until 20 years into my collection, and they surfaced out of Japan. And so it didn't matter how much money you had. If it didn't exist, you can't buy it, you know? And so it's an added component that's really cool about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, the value really means nothing to me. I love him as a player, and his story and his cards are amazing. So, you know, to me, it's about the collecting part of it. And to me, that tells me that's what you PC.
So what's the end goal for your Victor PC? Is it just something that you're going to pass down to somebody else in your family at some point, or what's the end goal?
That's a great question. You know, that's the other thing with collecting, you know, a player like this and the cards like this is, you know, there's checklists, but they're very incomplete. And there's new cards that surface every year. There's multiple cards that have come up. This set's never been seen before. So I can't say I'm going to collect every one of his cards because we don't know what they are. We don't know what exists. I don't know. I don't know what the end game is with this one. I'm just going to keep going until I'm not on this earth anymore. And somebody's either going to fall in love and get to inherit them, or they're going to be mad and have to deal with it. One of the two.
Okay, so how many times a week do you wake up being happy about Victor Starvin? Like, is that a tangible question to ask you?
You know, it's funny is, like, I'll see on social media and stuff, I'll see references every once in a while, different things will pop up, and that's cool. But, I have to admit my geekiness here, right? This past weekend, I actually had a day where I didn't have to do anything. So, I we're in South Florida, beautiful weather, had the windows open. I sat on out on my porch, and I just went through my Victor Starvin cards and just going through the different sets and stuff. And I love that. I love, and you know, and anytime I see any other Japanese cards, like, I got Starfin's card from that set, so I'll go and find. So to me, it's just, I love looking at him. I love seeing him, doing the research. I have a stack of his cards in my collection that don't have any information. You know, some that I've researched and found, some eventually gets cataloged, but, you know, I'll go back through them and go, oh, let's do a little more research. Let's see if we can find some more. You know, it's a great way to learn Japanese.
I think all of this stuff is amazing content for people looking to PC and helping people find their why in sports cards. I think this is amazing. And before I pass it back over to AC from Football Card Quest here, I got one more question for you. So what do you say to people flipping sports cards? Because I think there's a lot of people out there like myself that get the same kind of enjoyment essentially through the transaction and the challenge of finding the cards that are going to go up in value, almost from like a fantasy sports perspective.
Yeah.
In terms of like state of the hobby, what's your point of view on where the flippers fit into the equation?
I can't sell cards now, but you know, at one point I used to sell cards. And that's how I funded my PC and my personal, not just my PC, but other cards that I kept, is that, you know, I used to really keep up with prospecting. And I was doing the same thing. I would prospect and grade and flip. And, you know, I didn't hold those cards because I love modern cards. I think they're great. I just don't keep many of them. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was a means of being able to fund my real collection. And so it was great. You know, I was grading and flipping tons of brand new modern stuff. I just don't hold modern stuff for me personally. To me, at the time when I was buying and selling, it was a means to grow what I really wanted.
See, Andy Broom, VP CGC Card, says everything's allowed in the hobby, right? As long as you're doing it the right way, everything's allowed.
Makes me want to ask if you play fantasy football.
I don't anymore. No, unfortunately, I just don't have time to do fantasy sport. I always enjoyed it, but the last season I played, I ended up neglecting, a lot. Yeah, it kind of ruined it.
Well, what we see in football cards is a lot of team loyalty. Like, people will collect all the players from a specific team, and the interesting thing is with Ultra Modern, a lot of these guys change teams kind of often. You know, you have big trades go down every year. So, like, one of my guys, Mike Evans, is on the free agency block this year. He might be moving teams, and he's my PC. And so I'm thinking about moving those, you know, to then move into other guys that are still on my team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know. So, and with fantasy football, you know, we try and take that knowledge of, like, hey, you were able to spend a 5th to 10th round pick on a guy. You know, that same guy is going to perform like a first rounder. That's why you should buy into his rookie card. So we're constantly looking at the sold data, and we've been pulling up a lot more CGC sold data lately in our partnership with you guys to showcase how that stands up against a SGC and a BGS and a PSA card. You know, there's a lot of you guys are the four major grading companies in the market. What do you think differentiates your slabs in the ultra modern market from PSA, BGS, and SGC?
Yeah, you know, we bring some interesting things to the table, and some of the things that I'm told all the time, because I like asking, you know, what why use us, right? I know my reasons and our goals, but why you know do people select us? And number one, I think, is our holder. I think we have the best holder in the industry. You know, our goal was to make the absolute crystal clear, you know, the no distraction holder, right? Just because the card is the focus. That's the main thing. And, you know, our holder is well known in the industry. Our consistency is another thing that we're known for, consistency. But, you know, the longevity of our company. CGC Cards, you know, we've only been around a few years. We've been grading sports cards since 2021. But Certified Collectibles Group as a whole, we've been grading collectibles since 1987. So we are the world's largest collectibles grading and authentication company, if I can get that out. And so, I mean, you know, that means a lot. You know, we have a written guarantee that backs our grading up. That's right there on our website. We don't hide that. That history, our brand that people know and have known for a very long time, that's important. You know, that consistency is important, but also what's the legacy, right? What's the reputation of the company as a whole? And, you know, when we're, like I said, you know, some companies, they don't have a guarantee for their grading, or if they do, it's whatever. But, you know, we try to be the most transparent company that we can. You know, if you call our text our customer service, you're going to get a response. We have on-site customer service. It's not something we outsource. That's very important to us. And so, you know, I think the biggest, putting it all together, the biggest thing here is we're all collectors too. All of my graders are collectors, and all the way to the top. You know, we come from the collecting background where we actively collect. And so I mentioned before, you know, I look at it from a standpoint of a collector. If I don't like something, then that's a problem. You know, I look at it as, what do I want to, when I get home and open the box out of the mail, what do I want to see? You know, how do I want to see the cards presented, the holders and that, and so on. And so I think that is very important to know that we come from a background of collectors. We know what we like, and hopefully that's what you guys like as well. And that shows through our product.
I'll tell you what I want to see. One of those gold label pristine 10s in the mail. If I had a 2022 Brock Purdy Prism silver that I sent in, and if it had, say, one dimple, you know, because a lot of these, like you talked about the chrome cards, the ultra modern, they have this the etching, yeah. and some of them have those dimples, almost like where a little you know, pin or something create a little dimple. Right. If there's just even one of those, would that, do you think, knock it down from a gold label pristine 10? To a 10 or maybe even a 9 or 9.5?
Yeah, not necessarily like a 9 or 9.5. It really, there's a lot of factors with the dimples specifically, the lines, the etching. And, you know, one thing is where does it happen on the card, right? If it's in the background, is it on his face? Is it somewhere in between? Those all weigh into it. So depending on the design, depending on where the pinpoint is, that's all the difference. So, you know, on pristine card, you're not going to see those types of dimples normally. That's probably going to be a gem mint, but it depends on where it is. And sometimes in the design we see in the etching, sometimes what looks like a dimple is part of the design. So that's kind of a challenge too, is seeing which is a manufacturing defect and which is part of the design. So, you know, when you're looking at a gem mint card, that's something that you could have a pinpoint. You know, that's acceptable. Pristine card, you're not going to see that unless it's something that really has more to do with the design.
Has there been quite a few pristines given out, or is that, you know, like what would you say is the overall percentage if you had to guess of pristines versus?
Yeah, you know, it's a low percentage. It's going to be just a 2% or so, somewhere in there. It's going to be a very small percentage because that is the best of the best. You know, gem mint card, most people think, well, that's as good as it gets. Well, it's a gem mint, so it's better than mint, but may still have a flaw. Whereas a pristine card, you know, we expect that to be, it has to be, you know, flawless, you know, to the naked eye, but also under the loop, certain aspects have to be flawless. So, you know, pristine's hard to get, and it's hard to get for a reason, because that is the best of the best. It's a gem mint card that just doesn't have the, you know, any flaws to it. And so, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get a pristine. But, you know, that's, and I hope the value reflects that in the secondary market of how tough those are to get. That is the top of the top, you know.
I want to ask a question in a second about the secondary market since you brought it up, but you've already hit on consistency in grading, quality in grading, and customer service, but you said the word guarantee. Can you just elaborate real quick on what is the guarantee behind CGC?
Yeah, so we guarantee our grading. You know, if our grading is off, or if a card is counterfeit, you know, our guarantee covers that. And you can go to cgccards.com and read the full guarantee, but you know, we guarantee the grade and the authenticity.
So in terms of the secondary market, which you mentioned a second ago, my hypothesis is that when you put everything into perspective, CGC has been grading sports cards since 2021. If you put that into perspective, the fact that you guys are already in the top 4 grading companies for sports cards is pretty incredible. My hypothesis is that now that you've sort of locked in the acronym CGC and the label, right, and you kept the same grade slab, over time I see CGC rising in the secondary market with that awareness consistency, not changing the grading scale again, not changing the label again and locking that in. What's your take on all of that?
100%. You know, look, you know, when we started out, CGC trading cards was first, then CSG started, and you know, hindsight's 2020. In the very beginning, we should have been what our goal was the entire time, and to be CGC cards all in one. And so in order to accomplish that, we did make some changes. We merged the two into CGC cards. We changed the label so we're consistent in the labeling. And so now we are where we want to be, and we're not making a change. This is it. I mean, this is where we wanted to be, and this is where we're going to be. So, you know, I do 100% understand that there's some people like, oh, I'm, you know, I don't want to buy in because they're going to change your label again. And, you know, that's not the case. That's not the case. And I know time tells, you know, what, but, you know, I can assure you, you know, we've made the changes that we feel were very important. I strongly feel that moving to the Gem Mint 10 scale over the 9.5 Gem Mint, it was a no-brainer. It's what the market, that's where the market is. You know, things changed a lot during the pandemic and everything and all walks of life. But in cards, you know, in grading, the whole market shifted towards the Gem Mint 10 scale. And so there were changes that needed to be made, but they're done. And you know, now we're like I said, we're going to be announcing some crazy new holders and some other big announcements coming that I really, really wish I could say more about. But you know, we're in the next phase. We're moving on.
All the more reason to talk to us again, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
When you're ready to announce it, you come on the Sports Card Strategy Show and Football Card Quest.
Absolutely.
We help get the word out.
Yeah, we can do that.
Andy Broom, VP of CGC Cards, one of the best graders in the industry. Anything else you want to add while we have you here as part of the nooffseason.com family?
No, look, I say, this is great. I love talking, of course, talking grading, but I love talking the hobby, right? Because, I mean, this is my passion. So anytime that I get to come in and talk about grading and talk about cards, I'm there. So thank you.
You got somebody who holds zero cards and flips all of them. You got somebody who holds Victor Starfin cards for some reason. And then you got somebody who does a little bit of both, right?
Yes, that's right. So I was actually going to ask you, because most of my focus is on ultra-modern cards. I have some older cards, probably as old as like early 80s in my PC. But in terms of like ultra-modern cards, I see the big difference in between vintage and ultra-modern. It's like vintage, you have maybe one to three different rookie cards for a player. And it's a lot about how good of a grade can you get, right? You know, you see a huge difference between a 10 Jerry Rice and then, you know, a 9 or an 8 from 86 Tops. When you look at ultra modern, it's like now you got 60 different prism parallels and 60 different sets with, you know, we look at like some guys from the past couple of years, like Kenny Pickett, regardless of what you think about it, he has like 7,000 different, you know, rookie cards. If you look at tradingcarddatabase.com, what do you feel is like in terms of the ultra modern cards and the hobby? What do you feel like is the sweet spot that people should focus on? Should they focus on, you know, the quarterbacks, like getting the quarterback's base card, like a base prism Brock Purdy, and trying to grade that, or should they go for something a little bit more scarce? Do you have any takes or opinions on that?
Yeah, I mean, my opinion, you know, quarterback's a great example. You know, I have a few that I've collected, and I like their marquee card, right? Whatever the base card is, that's the rookie. I use, like, the 89 Griffey, 89 Upper Deck Griffey. He has multiple rookies, but everybody wants the Upper Deck. So what is this quarterback's 89 Upper Deck? But, you know, there are a lot of options. Like you said, I mean, it's I guess first off, you know, thank you, Lord, that I'm not PCing a modern player. But but no, you know, for me, I think you go for the scarcity. I'll give an analogy with autographs, right? And we've seen this happen, but many years ago, I chase autographs. And many years ago, myself and a couple of individuals that I've known for a long time, we go to a lot of shows, obviously, and we'd always try to get a rookie card signed, talking vintage, right? 40s and 50s and 60s. And not only getting that vintage rookie card signed, but also what kind of crazy inscription can we get, right? What's the most unique inscription? And now flash forward 15 years or so, and now that is what everybody's chasing. So I think it's no different when you have a large amount of different options, all the different parallels to choose from. I think you have to go with what's unique. What's the scarcest, most unique you can get? Maybe it's not the one of one, but there's all other unique things. I think the autograph inscription is another great example. You know, on a rookie card, you know, if you can find one that does have an inscription, I think that's longevity. If you're keeping for your PC, that's the stuff that'll stand out later.
Those stand out to me, especially the Panini encased,
yeah,
or even some of the Leaf cards,
yeah,
that they inscribe stuff on. So
yeah, I think Leaf does a great job with the autographs. And again, you know, I've known Brian Gray for a long time. You know, he's not with Leaf now, but he's an autograph guy too, and so he would think that way too. Is what kind of cool, crazy inscription can we get? And so I love that they do it. I hope that other manufacturers, you know, follow on that.
I've always told people the rookie ticket auto from Contenders is like the sweet spot of got some scarcity, got a rookie autograph. They go pretty deep in that set in terms of like they print free agents, guys that didn't get drafted. They still have a rookie ticket auto. And then the GOAT, Tom Brady, his most iconic card, in my opinion, is the rookie ticket auto in terms of resale. But maybe it's the Bowman or Bowman Chrome from 2000.
Yeah, I think like it'd be an argument for both. I mean, value-wise, you know, most people probably out of the Contenders, you know, range, and the Bowman would be that next classic base card. But yeah, for sure.
So, in your opinion, is he the GOAT? Who is your GOAT quarterback? He's the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah, in football, yeah, as far as quarterbacks go, I'd have to say Tom Brady, yeah.
All right. Yeah. There you go, Peyton Manning fans.
I do love Peyton Manning. I'm originally from Tennessee, so I have always loved Peyton, but I think when it comes down to just, you know, on the field, I think Tom Brady's the GOAT. Yeah.
All right, I have to ask you some questions about the hobby, because it's not every day that we get an opportunity to talk to somebody who's been in the hobby as long as you have and has all the experience that you have. So I say that the hobby, I kind of like chuckle a little bit that we all call it the hobby,
right?
And really it's an industry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an industry, but I believe it's an industry kind of without a trade association. It's like, it's kind of the wild, wild west a little bit, which is kind of exciting, but it's also a little bit scary. Give me one thing that you think is, that you're concerned about with the state of the hobby, and then maybe one thing or more than one thing that you're really excited about in terms of the state of the hobby.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because, you know, I've always thought that this industry, like many industries, it does need some sort of officiating, per se, right? You know, coins, you know, you have the American Numismatic Association. It's a great organization. It kind of governs over the hobby of coin collecting in the industry. And you know, cards, why don't we have an organization like that? Why aren't there certain standards that you know, we as the professionals all use some of the same standards? I think that's something that, and it's been talked about for many you know, decades even. I do think that's something that still has validity. It just helps, you know. You know, the biggest problems we see now are the problems we've always seen. You know, we still see problems with counterfeiting. I'm seeing more and more of certain cards coming out. The quality just gets better and better. You know, that's always a concern. You know, card doctoring is still always a concern that we see that. The fantasy cards, see a lot of those coming through now. And what's interesting, and maybe because I'm old, I don't know, but, you know, there's when I first started, it seemed like if you were into cards and you were doing shows and real heavy in collecting, like, you just knew, you know, these were fantasy cards. These are, you know, the black and white Billy Ripken 89 Fleers, you know, those were fantasy cards. But then I see these same types of fantasy cards popping up, like, on Twitter and other social media and stuff. And people are like, oh my God, this is an awesome card. I've never seen it before, you know. So it's almost like we're seeing that recycle over. And, you know, that's a problem. And again, it's education. We try to put out as much educational material as we can. We do counterfeit reports and things. But, you know, the collector and the consumer have to do that too. So, you know, those are some things I think there's still concerns in our hobby. And so, you know, I think they'll always be there, but I think there's some things that we can do as a hobby, as an industry, to help work together. And, you know, I don't know exactly how that looks, what type of organization, but I think there should be something there. What I'm really excited about is, man, there's just always more in this industry. You know, people bringing new ideas to it, and it's making it fun. You know, I use the example of the T206 set. 524 cards, right? We know what the cards are. What more can we do with this thing? But it seems like every couple of years we find a new way to collect this old set. You know, first it was the backs, and then it was errors, printing errors and freaks and hand cut stuff. And so there's always these little nuances. We find this new way to collect something that's old. And that's what's cool about this hobby, is there's always something new coming to the table, and that's what it's about. Look, you do this for a living, you're doing this for a living, I do this for a living. So it's a job, but it is a hobby. And you know, I've said this for a long time, and I still mean it. You know, the day it's not fun, I'll find something else, you know. So I'm that's what I love about the hobby. I'm most excited about. There's still a lot of innovation and a lot of new things coming out that we can all get involved with.
When you're just outside of the hobby in your regular life, like, how do you even begin to explain how fascinating what we're doing is to other people who don't do it? It's like, it's impossible to try to explain it to them. And like you said, it's limitless.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. No, the best response when people ask what you do for a living, you usually say, I'm a plumber, because that's the easiest thing. No, it is. It's crazy. I'll never forget. This was many years ago. I had a doctor and he's, you know, asked what I did and all that. And he grew very concerned on his face. And then, so, you know, as we're going through the doctor visit and whatever, he gets to the end and he's like, well, good luck. You know, I hope you find something where you can make a good living. And I said, well, I appreciate it. I think I'm doing okay. But it's like, he had no clue. He's like, oh, you play with cards. You must be poor. And, you know, but it is. It's funny to get the reaction from people when they go, oh, what do you do? You know, I grade trading cards and sports cards. And that's, yeah. Yeah. You do a whole episode on the responses I've gotten over the years.
You literally went from being a kid who was interested in baseball cards and learning about why this woman was selling these old 38 Gaudis to figuring out on your own and then just making a career out of it. That's phenomenal. I mean, I would encourage everybody out there in the audience to find something that they love to try to do and, you know, forge their path. And I think the hobby's seen more and more content creators, right? More and more people that do what AC and I do. What advice would you get? And you have in-house, a great in-house content creation team that we've worked with already. What advice would you give hobby content creators, people that are trying to get in and create content in the hobby?
Yeah, you know, that is one of the great things about the industry as well, is the amount of information that's out there. You know, I since you just asked the questions, I'm thinking in my head, you know, you think back, you find a card you never seen before back in the late 80s, because I did pre-war, you find something. Man, it took some time to really learn about it. And sometimes it wasn't until you go to three or four card shows and some guy's sitting there, oh, yeah, that's this, you know. So the content in today, I mean, it's amazing. This is stuff you know, it's funny. I'll read an article about something and somebody has this huge in-depth article. And I was like, man, I wish I'd known that, you know, 20 years ago when I had to research it on my own. So I think, you know, as a content creator, understand that there's so much out there in this industry, such a big hobby. There's so many niche things to talk about. But me as a collector, and I think other collectors, we want to know, give us the deep dive on it, right? You know, like we're talking about like Victor Sarfin. Like this is just scratching the surface about that story. There's a lot of great content out there, but, you know, there could be volumes written on vintage Japanese cards and just about how they were distributed and how they're made and things like that. And I think that's how content creators have to look at it, you know. Anyone can take a big, hot, sexy card that somebody posts on social media and then repost it with your description. It's not really creating content, right? That's just, you're just rehashing something that's already out there. But if you have a passion for this industry, deep dive and find what's cool to you. Because if you find something, some niche story or something that's cool to you, it's probably cool to a lot of other people too. And so to me, when I'm working with content, putting things together, that's the way I look at it too, is this is really cool. I didn't even know this existed. I got to tell everybody. And I think that's content that really people want. People look for that.
Love that advice. AC from Football Card Quest, you got any other questions for Andy Broom, VP of CGC Cards?
No, I love the interview. Thank you, Andy. I think the hobby is all about attention to detail. You know, people love the details. I mean, the details are so important in the hobby. And that's part of why my channel is 100% dedicated to football cards research, and that's why all that. I mean, it's enough, right? I mean, I've got Mike Evans got 5 different photo parallels of his base prism rookie card when I went to start, you know, collecting. I'm like, oh boy, you know. So no, I really appreciate your time today, Andy, and looking forward to, you know, continuing to do more research. Anytime I evaluate a player, pull up and try and find, you know, the CGC cards and how they stack up. You know, because I see really promising sold data on eBay virtually every single day around CGC cards and where they stack up against SGC, BGS, and PSA. So I'm excited to see you guys grow in the future in the hobby.
Awesome. Thank you.
I have learned a ton. I knew I would learn a ton, and I've had a lot of fun, and really honored that we were able to come and sit down and talk to you, Andy Broom, and hopefully our audience feels the same way. I know they will. Any last words for you before we let you get back to your daily grind here?
Back to grading cards. No, listen, I appreciate you guys coming out and having me on. I just love talking cards.
All right, everybody. Andy Broom, VP of CGC Cards. Check out cgccards.com. Paul Hickey with NoOffSeason.com signing off. Andy, thanks again for joining us here in the NoOffSeason.com fam. And thanks to Football Card Quest, as always, the best partner out there for us at NoOffSeason.com.
Yeah, shout out to the whole CGC team, Andy Broom, all the people that we work with. Shout out to Andy Kaysen, Football Card Quest. Andy made our experience down in Tampa a lot easier than it would have been without him being there. Like Paul mentioned, a fantastic partner for us. But hope you guys enjoyed that. We do have more CGC content coming in, shorter form content in the near future. For now, let's go ahead and hop into some of the comments, the audience Q&A, if you will. We're going to kick things off with Mr. T. It says, which rookie QB will start and have the most success in September? Obviously, this one isn't necessarily card focused and is more, I would say, subjective rather than objective. But let's do a little bit of a rundown of what things might look like here. So I'm going to give you guys my two cents on things. Obviously, Caleb Williams appeared to be the draft pick number one. Still likely will be, but there has been some rumors based on you know, the combine stuff and pre-draft drama that maybe he might slide. Depends where he goes, right? We just don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the Bears are still going to do. We don't know where Caleb's going yet. So a couple guys that I'd be looking at, one is I'm not even necessarily – and this is not card-based, right? This isn't card-based. So this isn't – I'm not giving you guys ways to make money right here. This is just my opinion on who is going to potentially start and do well as a rookie. Curious to see what Drake May does. You know, there's some accuracy questions, but he's kind of got that Josh Allen talent to him. I think my guys would be Jaden Daniels, Heisman winner out of LSU. Obviously kind of that dual threat guy, that Lamar Jackson type. And then Bo Nix, who had an elite combine showing. I think he's got a lot of upside, had a fantastic into his college career at Oregon. So those are kind of the two guys that I'm looking at there. Obviously, it depends on where they go, what this current quarterback situation is on the front, on the roster that they get drafted to. But that's just my two cents there. I'd be curious to see, who do you guys think is going to be the standout quarterback as a rookie this year? Who's going to be this year's CJ Stroud? Leave a comment below or drop it in the live chat. Curious to see what you guys think there. And then also we got our guy Barry Siff. Thoughts on Anthony Edwards in light of the cat injury and the downward spiral of Halliburton's Pacers. This is right down my alley, Barry. Obviously, cat out for the year with the tears. Anthony Edwards has been stepping up big. He had the preposterous game ceiling, I'll use that term, block the other night against the Pacers, where he hit his head on either the backboard or the rim, getting a lot of comparisons to Michael Jordan, potentially being even offered up that he might be Michael Jordan's son. But man, I'm a huge Anthony Edwards guy. He's one of my favorite guys to watch in the league right now. I think that Cat being out, obviously, is going to see him have an extended runway in terms of offensive freedom. You know, against the Pacers that game, he took 35 shots, finished with 44 points, 6 boards, and 3 assists. Played against the Clippers on the 12th. So yesterday, took 29 shots. Game before, took 23 shots. Game before, took 27 shots. So we're seeing him get the thing up, playing a lot of minutes, 36, 40, 42, 39, 35. So ultimately, it's going to be good Anthony Edwards exposure. I don't know that it's going to be good for the Timberwolves in the long run. In terms of his actual sports cards, let's take a look at his market real quick and see how Anthony Edwards is doing the last week or so, obviously, since we've seen Cat go down to an unfortunate injury, especially with how good the Timberwolves were looking. You know, they have kind of slipped a little bit. I mean, they're still playing great basketball, 45 and 21 this year. They're half a game back out of first place, which is tied between the Thunder and the Nuggets, and they're in the West, 6-4 in their last 10. Playing well on the road, 22-13 is a really, really solid road record. Obviously, that cat injury hurts, but we're talking about Ant-Man here. So let's look at his overall markets past 7 days. He's up 5%. That's graded and non-graded cards. Nearly 400 different cards traded for 1,200 total sales. If we look at rookie cards in PSA 10, let's see if anything's jumping up. Shout out to Market Movers for the data there. Not a whole lot to note here. His Prism Base is up 38% from 76 to 105 bucks across 33 sales the last 7 days. So enough sales out of there. So if you're holding a base Prism, you might want to look at listing it. Prism Silver is also, Prism Silver is up 33%, over 17 trades the last 7 days. That's in PSA 10. So yeah, I mean, he's seeing healthy spikes right now. I probably wouldn't necessarily list him as a buy unless you're finding steals. Might need to look at kind of our player profiles and our rankings to determine where he's at overall based on the cards that we think you should be buying from him right now. But a good point there, Barry. Also, in relation to the downward spiral of Halliburton's Pacers, I don't really feel like they're spiraling quite yet. 6-4 their last 10. They're still sixth in the Eastern Conference at 37-29. 20-13 at home, 17-16 on the road. So not a great road record. However, they are young, right? So one thing to consider with these younger teams, and when I say they're young, they are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They're the eighth youngest team in the NBA at an average age of 25.1 years. That was as of October 30th in 2023. So a little bit older now, a couple months older on average as a team. But 1, 2, 3, 4. When you look at the eighth youngest team, there's a couple other teams in here that are competing. That's the Orlando Magic, who are the fourth youngest, and the Thunder are actually the second youngest at under 24 years old on average. one thing to note is that a lot of these younger players haven't seen this length of a season in a, like, ever. They've never played this many games. Even the guys that are playing AAU basketball, you know, whether it be three, four, or five games in a day, which I think is terrible for young athletes, but that's beside the point. They're only doing that for a couple months out of the year, whereas these guys are going to play 82 games spending over, you know, 4 months, night in, night out, a lot of travel, a lot of things like that. So I think it's very easy for the younger teams to kind of hit a wall, per se, and kind of have to get their legs back under them. So I think that might be a little bit of what we're seeing with the Pacers. You know, Halliburton, he had the game on March 1st where he didn't score points, 0-7 from the field, 0-6 from three, just three boards and three assists. But you're right, Barry. Since then, he hasn't been not quite up to Halliburton standards. 12 points, 8 assists, 19-11, not bad. 23-13, solid. 20-8, 18-12. I mean, kind of standard Halliburton games. Like I mentioned, they're 6-4. I think they're in a good spot. So, obviously, with the way that the plan works this year, there's no way to kind of project. I mean, you could slightly project who we think they're going to be playing. But I still like where they sit. I like the pieces they have. They seem to be healthy for the most part. Significant Pacers injuries. Make sure I'm not missing anything here. Doug McDermott's strained right calf. Benedict Mathurin. Oh, Mathurin tore labrum 12 hours ago. Wow. That's a big loss for them. That's a big loss for them. Good point. I'm assuming that's some of what you were referring to, Barry. Yeah, big loss for them. A guy that was averaging nearly 15 points a game, efficient, kind of three-level score, 45% from the field, 37% from three. That's a big loss for them, for sure. But I still think they've got a lot of pieces. They've got some decent depth. I'd be curious to see what they do. I don't think they're going to be necessarily a finals contender this year, but it'll be good for them to get some playoff experience. And I texted my buddy this the other day. I said this might be the most exciting playoff and unexpected and least predictable playoffs for the NBA that we've had since I've been on Earth, which is at this point only 25 years. But nonetheless, I'm really excited for these playoffs. I'm really excited to see what Cards do. I'm really excited to see what some of our guys do that we've told you guys to buy, hoping to see some really healthy gains. And obviously, we will have sell alerts popping for you guys if we do see those jumps there. Hopefully you guys really enjoyed the Andy Broom piece today. I thought there was a lot of insightful stuff, even if it's just about CGC stuff, about his personal life, about grading cards, about what to look for, about pre-grading, things like that. So shout out to Andy and the CGC team again for all of that stuff. Quick housekeeping before I sign off from you guys today. Regularly scheduled programming will return on Monday, March 18th with Paul Hickey. And then again, I mentioned this on Monday as well as last week. No overflow show on Friday the 15th with Paul out of town. So 2 days from now, Friday. But we will be doubling down on Friday the 22nd. So if you're a premium member, needs questions answered, go to nooffseason.com/ask. Submit them there. And on the 22nd, we will be doubling down there. Barry says, thanks, Connor. Holding a few big Ant-Man cards. May put a 10 Prism Silver up this weekend. Holding on to my Halliburton 10 Silver. East is massive. West is crazy. Still fingers crossed on my Suns. Barry, I do still like how the Suns are doing. And I said it when the trade happened. I said picking up Grayson Allen was massive for the Suns. And I was right. He's been snapping. He had, either 7 or 8 threes in the first quarter last week. So excited to see what the Suns do if they can get to the playoffs healthy, Barry. But, yeah, we'll discuss Ant-Man more depending on what you got in there. But I still think that the Ant-Man Prism Silver – and I think Paul's on a similar page. I wouldn't be surprised if it's an $800 to $1,000 card next year or something like that. So it really depends on where you got in and how much you need to get your cash flow back, stuff like that. But thanks for the interesting input there and the insight in the kind of conversation starter for us. Again, back to overflow. Doubling down on the 22nd. So get your questions submitted at nooffseason.com/ask if you're a premium member, and we will answer on the 22nd. Also, if you're not a premium member, you can get a free trial at nooffseason.com. 30-day free trial. And you get the overflow show included in that, sports card school, premium articles, player rankings, things like that. Guys, thanks for all the fantastic support. Thanks for bearing with me this week with Paul Hickey out of the shop. Appreciate all the support as always from you guys. And the next time that you guys will see me will be next Wednesday. Until then, everybody have a fantastic end of your week, and appreciate all the love. See you guys.
thanks so much for being here with us on the Sports Card Strategy Show. To connect with us further, please subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/Paul Hickey. Please also give us a follow on Instagram at Sports Card Strategy and on X at No Off Season Card. We also have a Discord that you could join at sportscardstrategy.com. Everyone, I'm Paul Hickey. For the rest of us here at nooffseason.com, have a great day. We'll see you again soon.